I'm Danny Brown, and you're listening to Life Through a Dram.
Welcome to Life Through a Dram, where Danny Brown shares his take on life, being a better person, and appreciating the here and now, all accompanied by a dram and a fine single malt whiskey. And now, here's your host, Danny Brown.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Life Through a Dram. This week, I'm joined by my Facebook friend, I guess. yet to be offline, but certainly I have a lot of fun online and a few of the groups that we're on together. Kristen Elliott, who's over in New York. Is that correct, Kristen?
Yes, a recent transplant, but yes, in Mineola, New York on Long Island.
Alrighty. So welcome to the show. What are you drinking today? What's your dram or your choice?
Well, my dram is actually a Drambuie and soda.
Oh, okay. And interesting, because like Drambuie, I always find that very sticky, you know. So I guess the soda's like taking it down a bit.
Yeah, so basically juice of half of a lime and a little bit of a Sprite kind of mixed in there to thin it out a bit.
Oh, quite the cocktail then. And you'd mentioned when we were chatting earlier, and they might even pop up on the podcast while we're recording it, you've got the bands outside for the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Yes, this weekend it's the Mineola St. Patrick's Day Parade here on Long Island. When I moved here, I didn't realize until after I signed the lease that I'm a half a block away from the Long Island Irish American Society.
Oh, so that's, I bet you have fun weekends then.
I do when I can get over there, yes.
Awesome. Well, I'll join you in your Drambuie. I'm drinking a 10-year-old Ardbeg today.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is like from the, I'm very particular to the Islay region of whiskies. And this one's one of my favorites. It's like only a 10-year-old, but it's just perfection. So I'll raise that to you in the Slánchivar.
Sláinte.
So one of the things that I noticed then, and I'm not sure if this is just something that you like because of the name that was on it. On your Facebook page, on your Facebook profile, sorry, on your header, it's got the London Borough of Southwark. Now, is that because you've got history from the UK, or is it because of the name of the sign that's on there?
Oh, no, I have a very strong history to the UK.
Oh, okay.
My grandfather was born in Hartlepool, which is in the northern part of England, to an Irish father and a Scottish mother.
Okay, interesting mix.
Yes, and then on my mother's side, I think when she did one of those genetic DNA tests, she came in at 90% English.
Right. Oh, wow. So, yeah, very big UK history.
Yes, and then 25% in there is Danish.
Ah, so like was that like the Norsemen, like the Vikings?
Yes, which for me was always very funny in an interesting way. That once I realized that, you know, my grandfather being born in Northern England, marrying my grandmother who was 100% Danish, at one point I realized that probably the place whenever I've gone over to the UK that just has felt, you know, most comfortable and happy to me is York. It's the most fantastic right. place on the face of the planet, which I didn't realize my first trip there back in the 90s, but when I was there a couple of years ago, that York was founded by, has a very strong Danish presence there because it was the Danish Vikings that settled there. Yeah. And York comes from Jorvik. You know, that's so kind of realizing that that's where a key part of my family heritage kind of all blended in that one spot, which I'm like, maybe that's why I've always felt this very strong connection to that part of the country.
No, and that's cool. I've been to York a few times when I still lived in the UK. And it's a beautiful, amazing, and like you say, very historic town, like the ramparts and the castle and all that. And I love all the little shops, you know,
the Shambles and, you know, the Minster. And then there's a great little brewery there called the York Brewery. And it wasn't there back in the 90s when I was there, but back in 2014, when the first of my, you know, incident or accidental annual trips to the UK, I stumbled across it, and that kind of became my home base for the majority of my trip when I was there in York. I'd pop right. in there, and, you know, they knew me by name, and I was still living in New Mexico at the time. So, you know, some knew me by name, and some would just pat me on the shoulder and say, "Hey, New Mexico is back."
That's an easy way to
exactly.
remember. So were you born in the US then, or you in the UK came over? Or
no, I was born in Arizona. Don't hold that against me. It's not my fault. But I guess the majority of my family kind of was really settled in the Midwest. Even my grandfather, when he came over, actually came over from Belfast, born in Hartlepool. Then his father, who was a shipbuilder for the White Star Lines, the Titanic was not our fault. But they moved over to Belfast to work for White Star around that time frame. And then from there, around the time of the Civil War, he came over to the U.S. to find work and get settled and bring the rest of the family over. So he settled in as a Presbyterian preacher in this little hamlet in Nebraska called Dannebrog, which was an enclave for a lot of Danish immigrants. And that's where he met my grandmother, who was born there, to parents who had both come over from Copenhagen. And then my mom's side of the family, that side, a lot of it hails back to the founding of our country. I'm related to Sam Adams and John Adams and John Quincy and all that. So we go back that far, but eventually they migrated and just kind of, you know, plopped right down in Kansas. And then,
So a lot of history in your family then. Wow. Now, you'd mentioned that obviously you used to live in Albuquerque in New Mexico. And you moved, was it last year, a year ago?
Yes.
You moved to New York?
The original date that I had picked for us to try and do this, I'd actually chosen specifically because it was the 1 year anniversary of me becoming a New York resident, of me setting foot, not as a tourist, but as somebody who was going to be living and working here. And so that was the end of January.
Right. Okay. And what brought that about? Was it just new place, new adventure? Was it a job, something?
It was the need for something different. You know, I really enjoy New Mexico. The craft beer scene there, I will venture to say, is some of the best in the country. But I progressed as far as I could at my current employer. And looking around within Albuquerque in New Mexico, they were looking for people with my skill set fresh out of college that they could pay next to nothing. So for me, the only way to kind of move forward was to move on. And I figured, why not New York? I haven't been there yet. It took me a good like 2.5 years to finally land a job, because why pay to move somebody across country when there's, you know, tons of people here already located here that are qualified and can do those things. And I just happened to make a connection with the right person. We talked, he liked my writing style, so I work in marketing. And he was finally able to get the approval to add somebody to the team, you know, made me an offer, and 3 weeks later I was out here. So yeah, 2 years and 3 weeks after I started.
Right. Now, and there must be some changes, I'm guessing. I mean, I've never been to Albuquerque, but I'd imagine, you know, there's been big changes or big differences from Albuquerque to New York. What have you found has been the biggest difference, or the biggest differences that, you know, from where you came from?
Well, I'm trying to say this without it being a slight on New Mexico, because again, I said I loved it there. It's a great atmosphere. If you've ever seen Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul, they're not that far off the culture, minus the drugs. The drugs aren't as bad. But I would say kind of like the sense of urgency that for somebody who's still in her professional career and career life, a lot of times, you know, New Mexico, it's very, you know, it's very laid back and relaxed. And you have a lot of people going there kind of like at the end of their careers where they're just looking to relax and settle, you know, settle down. Whereas for me, and so like deadlines weren't always met. And so for me coming out here, as far as work life goes, you know, I ask for something, it gets done. And if I remind somebody that something needs to be to get done and there's a deadline, I'm not looked at as some sort of strange beast with two heads. It's like, well, yes, you set a deadline and the deadline needs to be met. So that's been a big difference, which for me has been very good. And also there's a lot more energy out here. Again, I miss the craft beer culture out there, the craft beer scene. There are some great breweries out here in New York, but back in Albuquerque, I could, you know, my favorite watering hole, you know, like my local was just maybe, it was less than a quarter mile walk from my apartment. And if they were busy, I could walk, you know, like a tenth of a mile and find something else. And if they were busy, I could walk a tenth of a mile and find something else. And there's these great, you know, like pockets of breweries located around, you know, Albuquerque, where it's just like, take a Lyft or an Uber. You can hit, you know, four or five different places and Lyft and Uber home. Here, everything is very, very spread out, which is kind of, you know, odd when you think about it, because most people think, oh, everything is spread out in the out in the West, and everything is concentrated here, where at least for, you know, as far as beer goes, things are concentrated in pockets in New Mexico, whereas here you can't really go anywhere without driving, which can, yeah, which helps in moderation, because, right, you know, you actually have to get home. But at the same time, you know, it's you can't just say, you know, throw caution to the wind, get an Uber and just go somewhere and hit a whole bunch of places at once. So that's where some of the different benefits and drawbacks are between the two. But all in all, I've been really happy out here.
And obviously, I mean, I mentioned it there at the start of the show that we're in a couple of Facebook groups together, and one of them is about football, or, you know, for North American soccer, but it's football, guys, okay?
It's not football.
That, it is. It's not that game where you kick and run and whatever, you know, and grab it.
Where you do everything with the football but use your feet, yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that one. Proper football. So obviously, in New York, you've got two MLS teams there. So that must be, for a fan like yourself, that must be pretty cool to, you know, have the choice of which games to go to, etc.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I accidentally got myself into when I knew I was moving out here was, I take for granted that nobody pays attention to my Twitter. So, you know, I just randomly put stuff out there, knowing that I could say I get it off my chest and nobody's going to give two hoots. Well, before I moved here, again, I just, you know, typed in something Twitter, moving to New York, which team should I support, New York Red Bulls or NYCFC? Tagged both of them, went on my merry work day, thought nothing more of it. Well, the New York Red Bulls social media person saw it, instantly retweeted it. Next thing I know, my phone is exploding. And all these New York Red Bulls people saying, hey, here's why you have to support us. Here's why you have to support us. And then about 3 hours into it, the New York City FC people picked up on it. And then they, and actually, if anything, not their Twitter, you know, not anybody running their social media, just organically FC fans. And right. then they started tweeting back and forth about why I should support them back and forth. And it was an insane 3 or 4 days where all of this was going on. But what it did is it introduced me to another batch of people out here who were friends before I moved. And I've had friends back here, oh, for several years now. One friend that I was would visit fairly regularly and stay at her place. So I wasn't moving out here blind. But now it's like, okay, I have soccer friends out here in addition to music friends. And so there's a couple of the New York City fans, after I got my apartment, turned out one of the Twitter fans lives right around the corner from me. Had no clue. Huh. And another one owns a business just down the street from me. But then, like, I had like the first four games for each team, I didn't have to buy a ticket because people was like, yeah, that was quite nice. So I just had to pay the train fare, which is no cheap matter. But, you know, it's going to Red Bull games and New York City FC games and both of them. So I got a chance to really get to know the people and culture. Ultimately, I just like to watch good athleticism. I like to watch good games. But based on the experience, I actually wound up becoming a season ticket holder for the New York Red Bulls.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. I remember, because I think you mentioned that in the Facebook group
we're
in, you know, for the football group. And I remember, you know, hopping over and checking out some of the back and forth. And like you mentioned, some of the banter. It's one of the reasons I love football, like the banter between fans. You know, when done properly, is just hilarious and really good natured, you know.
Oh yeah. And it's, you know, for me, that's the joy of it, is like, you know, when it's playful ribbing back and forth, that's great. It's fun. Don't take things too seriously, because ultimately there are bigger things to worry about, and football is a lovely distraction. You know, there, you know, and I met a few people on both sides who take it way too seriously. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm like, you know, I'll pay attention in games and learn player names. I'm not going to go down to the minutiae of stats. I'm not going to necessarily remember random things that somebody did from 20 years ago that make things that's pertinent today. I don't get to that level of minutia because I just do like enjoy watching good games. But there is something very fun about having a team to follow and root for, especially with Red Bulls, who do very well because my English football team is Hartlepool United. And bless their hearts.
Are they were they in the third tier at the moment?
Yes, something like that. Yeah, no, because two years ago they got relegated for the, you know, it's like the first time in their history that they'd been below whatever their former division was. And then last year there was fear of them getting shut down because they didn't have money to pay players, and they were working with the the city to try and find ways to keep funding going until they could get new ownership. So it's been kind of dramatic for them. They're a storied team. They were founded in 1908, which was actually the same year my grandfather, who was born there, was born. So that's kind of made it a fun connection for me, not just that it's where he was born, but he was born the same year the football club was.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that I find, especially with the English game, there's so much money being put into the top tier.
Oh, yeah.
And I know some of that does filter down, but not in the way that it can. And yeah, the lower teams really struggle. I follow Bradford City, and they've been, you know, up and down for a few years. And I think we're actually in the same league as Hartlepool, if I can recall.
Yeah.
And yeah. But yeah, it's tough for the little teams.
Well, and
for
all
sure.
The drama going on with Notts right now, where it's the oldest professional club in the world, and they might get shuttered.
Yeah, it's sad. Sad to see. And then obviously the Man U's and the PSG's of the world, you know.
Yeah, you know.
Anyway, we could talk about this obviously for hours. Yeah, that would be a different podcast.
Exactly. I hear the flat lines across the North American continent.
Now, one of the things that I do like about you is your love of nerdy and geeky stuff. You posted that, I think it was the other day on Facebook, you'd mentioned that you'd either just finished White Dragon, so you're going to now watch Umbrella.
Yeah, so it was White Dragon and Umbrella.
What is it about?
I'm sorry.
Right, gotcha. So what is it about? Like, because I get you, I'm a geek myself, but for you, what was it that brought you into appreciation of geekness, I guess, and you know, what does it mean to be a geek?
For me, it was always the embracing of the other and celebrating the different. That I think that's really what kind of drew me to it, and just the fact that there was a level of intellectualism to it that I always appreciated, especially once you get down to the geekdom for Monty Python, where it's always very deep and layered what they're doing, even if it comes across as slapstick. So I think just for a lot, you know, like the geek culture, I think there's just something in the narrative of, you know, embracing it and celebrating what's different about people, and that's what makes them good. And, you know, the allegories that you could see to real life. I thought it was just a very fun, clever way of storytelling and a narrative that's just always connected with me. I love Doctor Who. I honestly, though, I didn't really get into it until the 2005 reboot with Eccleston. But I think that was mainly because I was like, all my friends were watching it growing up. I remember I had a friend in drama club who was knitting her own Tom Baker scarf. But being the youngest in my family, I was lowest on the totem pole when it came to choosing what to watch on TV. And there were always other things on that other family members wanted to watch at the same time that the old Doctor Who episodes were on the PBS station. So it wasn't for lack of wanting. It was just, for me, a lack of accessibility to be able to watch it. And then when I stumbled across it purely by accident, I think it was the Father's Day episode, the one where the Doctor and Rose go back and meet her dad. I didn't realize what I was watching until it came to a commercial break. And at that point, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is great. I was hooked from that point on. And I went back and I found the old episodes and, you know, got myself up to the point where I became enough of an acolyte that I was able to convert other people to watching New Who.
Right. Now, I know it's like the latest seasons. When I first started watching Doctor Who, it was probably the John Pertwee years, way back in the probably mid-70s, I think I jumped on it. And then that was followed by, I think, Tom Baker. So they were my two favourites, John Pertwee and Tom Baker. But I've seen a lot of, maybe not so much backlash, but a lot of people have said that the last season was kind of disappointing. It didn't quite gel with the fans and the stories weren't quite up to scratch. Do you feel that, or do you think
I think it was a vocal minority that who was saying that. And I'm not going to discount anybody's thoughts, because this is a truly one of those places where it's okay to have differences of opinions and it's okay. For me, though, I was exhausted by the end of Moffat's run. I was just exhausted. Right. I never cared for the Matt Smith years. It just felt like you had somebody who felt he was being held back, and like, because he wrote some of the best episodes in the Russell T. Davies years. I mean, hands down, the best episodes were all his, but you had somebody controlling and controlling his hand and reining him in. You know, once the reins came off, it was just monster of the week, monster of the week, monster of the week. I'm do big this, 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 this. And so for me, it was just exhausting. And I think it for me, it lost a lot of what Doctor Who had been with Chibnall coming on. And I was more hesitant about him than I was Jodie Whittaker, because he wrote some of the absolute worst episodes under Moffat's reign. But then he did Broadchurch, and I saw what he could do when he had creative control and could control the narrative. And so for me, I think what he did is like he scaled it back and he made it a lot simpler. And so people who are, I think, were really upset about it might have been those who were weaned in the Moffat years, where it was big, exploding, and everything happens and all the things. Whereas Chibnall kind of stripped it back to make it about the storytelling and the characters, and the fact that the big bad was nobody other than humans, that we truly are our own worst enemies. And it's kind of hard when you have people shining a mirror on you like that if you're not ready to hear it.
Yeah. And like you said, that's where I love the whole, you know, a lot of people look at, you know, comic book fans or whatever and say, oh, yeah, you're just nerds. It doesn't mean anything. But as you mentioned, there's so many subcontexts and lessons we can take, you know, from like Stan Lee. His whole goal was obviously to show people can be the best that they can be. You know, that's why they created some of the heroes he did. So I think a lot of people miss that because the pigeonhole, you know, sci-fi or geekdom or nerdship or whatever you want to call it into this bucket. And it's just, it's not.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a difference between honoring the fans and catering to the fans. And I think at some point, because the geeks have inherited the earth, they've think that they should be in control of everything now. And I think you saw a lot of that with the most recent Star Wars, is that they were trying so hard to cater to those fans that when they tried to do something, like, you're never going to please everybody. And if you're always trying, you're going to alienate everyone. So are you still there? Yeah. Sorry. You got quiet. I was like, is he still there?
Oh, no, you mentioned Last Jedi, and I always, that's my trigger point. I was like, you know, gripping the desk, so you didn't see that. But yeah, no, it's true. You can only, you know, you can only make the product that you want to make, and if it's accepted, it's accepted. If not, there's always going to be that
debate. Right, and you know, because you know, like everybody was complaining about The Force Awakens, that it was pretty much a rubber stamp of A New Hope. It's like, oh, they're exactly the same. So they went completely different with The Last Jedi. And then you had people going like, it's too different. Just like, you can't win. Do right by you. Do what feels right to you. And the people who connect to it will connect to it. And so that's where I was with this new season of Who. Were they all winners? No. But I loved getting back to the characters and the story and the connection and how they connected to this world around them, rather than it just being a monster of the week or a, you know, a big this of the week. It just was. And I think it was unsettling, I think, for some people. But for me, I appreciated that because I'm also a theater person and a writer, and seeing that kind of dedication, to me, I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, I think that's as good a place as any to wrap up. Like I said, I could talk for hours on both football and sci-fi nerdiness. This is where we'll have to get together sometime, either, you know, next time I'm in New York or if you're over here or whatever, and just, like, you know, go at it with the discussion. But before we leave, where can people find you online, Kristen, if they are looking to connect with you?
On Twitter, I'm the She Nerd. Obviously. same on Instagram. Actually, the same on Untapped. I did, you know, I was enough of an early adopter with social media that I went through and grabbed the handle everywhere I could, even if I didn't know I was using the platform, just to make sure I would have the She Nerd no matter where I went.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Now, do you have a blog that you talk about your nerdiness, or is that just online?
Just on the social channels. I keep on thinking I need to get a blog going, and then other things come up, and it's like, oh, I'll get to it eventually. So I'll leave you with, I'll get to it eventually.
Yeah. I'll get to it eventually. That's going to be your tagline.
It's going to be on my gravestone. I'll die eventually.
Right, it will be. I'll get to it naturally. Exactly. I'll get to it sometime. Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on the show this week, Kristen. Like I said, I could chat for hours on these topics. And it's been really, you know, interesting hearing your take on some of the stuff that's been happening, you know, in the sci-fi universe. That I'm sure that'll go down, you know, well with the fans.
I can't wait for the hate mail. Woo!
Well, exactly. Never to send it. I will raise your glass. Slanchevar. Okay, guys, so this has been another episode of Life Through a Dram. As Kristen mentioned, you can find her online at The She Nerd, and I will drop links in the show notes below the episode, so you can connect with her there. Definitely worth connecting with. She's got a very funny sense of humor, which you'll find out as you know, get to know her. And as you heard, she knows her stuff. So really, you know, check her out. Until next time, guys, take care. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll speak soon. Slanjivar.
This has been Life Through a Dram. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.